When Chris proposes to Anne in front of Jerry, what does Jerry choke on? Answer at the end of the episode.
I'm Kurt Hapley, and I just realized I'm not holding my microphone.
And I will call my new Italian fast casual eatery the Local Calzone Zone.
You can trust me, because I don't care enough about you to lie.
Everything I do is the attitude of an award winner, because I've won an award.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis.
Hello, and welcome to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast where I discuss anything and everything from character breakdowns to episode rewatches, as well as some other trivia and tidbits about the show. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. This is episode number 101, being recorded Sunday, December 17th, 2023, and today I'm going to be covering Season 3, Episode 16, Lil Sebastian. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email citizensofpawnee@gmail.com. You can also follow and message the show on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast, as well as my other page at Parks Rec Memes. Just a reminder, this podcast will have full spoilers for the entire series. So what's going on, everyone? How's your week going? I'm very jittery right now. I'm on like my fourth cup of coffee. I've been up since, I've slept in today, kind of. I got up at like 7:30. Usually get up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock, so I guess 7:30, hell yeah, sleeping in. But anyway, Sunday is always, the Sunday mornings are always the longest for me because football starts at noon, and so whenever I wake up, it's just the longest time till it gets there. But today, the playoffs have started on my fantasy football league, and I'm so nervous, I can't watch the game, so I am podcasting right now. It's 12:18. My guys are going. Pretty much my whole team will be done by 3 o'clock. My opponent, which is my cousin and his buddy, they've got a bunch of guys going tonight and in the afternoon, so it's going to be very stressful, my afternoon. But anyway, like I said, very jittery also because I've had a lot of sugar this morning. I had to run to the grocery store this morning to get milk, so couldn't leave without coffee cake, and I love coffee cake, and I've had way too much of it, so woo! I am flying right now. Speaking of breakfast, you know what really pissed me off? Last weekend, Joni and I, we went to go get McDonald's breakfast. It was Sunday, and it was like 10:45-ish, something like that, so we got there, but they flipped over to the lunch menu, and I'm like, no way, dude, it's always been 10:30 on, throughout the day, and then 11 on the weekends, or was it 10:30 on the weekends, and 10 through, either way, I thought it was 11 o'clock, so when I got there, I was like, no, and I asked, and you're like, yeah, no, you know, no more breakfast, and then that made me think about, remember how it was such a fucking big deal? Whenever that was, like 3, 4, 5 years ago, when McDonald's rolled out the all-day breakfast, and it's like, yay, like, all the problems in the world were solved, like, everyone was so happy, it's like, yeah, you can get breakfast at 5 p.m., apparently, that died out quickly, because, like, I just thought of that, too, it's like, wait a minute, even it ending at, like, 10:30 or 11 o'clock, whatever, it's like, I thought they did breakfast all day, and then, yeah, Jody's like, no, they stopped doing that quite a while back. So that was such a great idea, wasn't it? And the world was so happy until it was like, hey, you know what? Maybe we don't care that much. And actually, it gives us a reason to get up in the morning and go get, that's your motivation. Go buy fast food. Happy belated birthday to my mom. Her birthday was last week and I forgot to mention it on that show. So, maybe one day when I force her to listen to these episodes, she'll be like, you're the greatest son ever. I didn't realize how many years has this show been going? This is like year 3. So I've probably said 3 times on the show, happy birthday, mom. And she'll appreciate it someday. But anyway, yeah, I had a busy week since the last episode. Last Tuesday, actually the night the episode came out, the 100th episode last week, went to a concert with my buddy Sasha and producer Tony from the Bitter Marks podcast, which is no longer a podcast, but if you're a fan of wrestling, I would recommend going back and checking that out. It's very funny. And then also Megan, Sasha's wife, who actually the concert I went to was my favorite band, A Wilhelm Scream. They played in Chicago, And the last concert I went to, I don't know, you'll have to go back and find on whatever episode it is. I think I talked about going to see this band. That was the last concert I went to besides the when I went and saw Joni's cousin's band, the AC/DC tribute band. That was a couple weeks ago. But like, this is, you know, a band that doesn't star someone who I'm related to. But anyway, yeah, so the three of us went, and last year Megan wore her Mouse Rat shirt, and I was just like, I remember I was so like, oh, because I was debating wearing mine, and actually I was kind of happy I didn't wear it because she wore hers and it would have looked like we were a couple. It would have been kind of weird, but yeah, I was pissed because she got like tons of compliments about it. So this year I wore the Mouse Rat shirt, and it was kind of one of those like, hey, I don't care if you're wearing it. And sure enough, like, it was funny because she remembered that too. She didn't wear the Mouse Rat shirt, but she was wearing a Fight Milk shirt, which is from Always Sunny. So it's kind of funny. We're still having like a battle with our, you know, our sitcom t-shirts. Either way, I had a hoodie on like the whole time. One person recognized my Mouse Rat shirt, and he was one of my buddies. shout out to you, Dave. So anyway, awesome concert. I got to see some of my friends I haven't seen in a while. My buddy Kyle, he plays in band Counterpunch, which was one of the openers. And Kyle actually lives out in Denver, but he flew in for this show. So it was pretty awesome. I haven't seen him in a long time. And then the other band that opened, much the same. They were awesome. A fan of all three of the bands. It was nice. Granted, the show still went late, but it was awesome only being three bands. And I can't remember the last time, if ever, I was actually at a venue or like a concert, and then from like open to close, I knew literally every single song that was played. Because even if it's like I know all the bands, maybe I'm not into every band as much as the other. So it's like, oh, I only know like two albums from this band, and it's like I don't know those songs. Like, I actually knew every song that was played, even a couple cover songs. It was pretty fun, but yeah, great show. We also went to the Chicago Botanical Gardens, not we as in Sasha, Megan, and Tony, and I, me and my family, and then Joni's sisters and my brother-in-law. Yeah, the Botanical Gardens, pretty dope, actually. Just, it's like a mile-long walking path, actually, that they just, I mean, like, it's always open throughout the year, but for Christmas, obviously, they do a light show, and so it's just like a very, it's like, it's one of those things where, like the episode of Parks and Rec when when April and Andy go to the Grand Canyon, and April's just like, I'm trying to find like a word, like I'm trying to find something negative to say about it, but I just can't. It's one of those kind of things. I'm not comparing this light show to the Grand Canyon, but it's like when you walk through, you're just like, this is beautiful. Like, they did a great job with this. And it's like, anyone that would be like, this sucks, this is ugly, is just like probably like an asshole. I don't know. If that's your opinion on the Chicago Botanical Garden at Christmas time, forget I said that. But yeah, it was a good time. I guess it's good that it's we're like a week out from Christmas, and it's like early spring weather. Right now it's 50 degrees. It's very rainy and it's shitty out. There's no snow at all. Like, yeah, it looks like we're getting closer to summertime than to wintertime. But so, yeah, I guess that was nice for that situation because it was relatively warm when we walked this. Yeah, it was like a mile. I don't think it was a mile and a half, but it was a long walk. It was a good time. I recommend it. And then, we had our family Christmas party last night, so it was good getting to see a lot of my cousins and whatnot. But it's just kind of a bummer. I mean, obviously, as I've gotten older, like the whole family, obviously my cousins and I, because Christmas used to be such a big deal. Like on Christmas Eve, we would always get together with my mom's half of the family, and you know, like I remember we would always be out till like after midnight. So it was crazy. We would get home, and then my parents would have to like, you know, obviously get everything out for the morning and whatnot. But now, like, like everyone's home by like 8:30. And it's like, yeah, we've just gotten older. And so Teresa from Germany, a friend of the show, she reached out. She sent this on Instagram, and I remember seeing it, but I forgot to read it for last week's episode because she did send it for that. She said, "Hi, Brian. According to Spotify, I listened to your podcast for 3,481 minutes. I obviously didn't count minutes throughout the year because it was so much fun listening. But that number sounds impressive. I don't know if it really is because I don't listen to that many podcasts. I don't know what info you see as the creator, but maybe for your 100th episode, it would be cool to get some behind-the-scenes info about who is listening and from where. Have a nice day." So I mentioned the Spotify Wrapped like 2 weeks ago, something like that, and I did say I wasn't going to go through it. However, you know, Teresa asked, and you know me, I'm always looking for content for this show. So I just had, I guess I'll toot my own horn for a little bit, but yeah, I do have some of the Spotify stuff here. So Teresa, this is for you, but again, I don't know, I just thought I'd share. So recall, this is all for 2023. So some stats for the show, Citizens of Pawnee. The top episode was episode 2, Leslie Knope. So obviously people are starting. That's good, though, actually. If that's the top episode, it means a lot of people are starting from the bottom there. Obviously, episode 1 wasn't really a character episode. That was just like a, hey, welcome to the show. And it was just me introducing myself and stuff. So, all right. That episode, Leslie Knope, was streamed 262% more than your average episode. So again, that means a lot of people listened to that episode and didn't continue from there. So, whatever. 83% of the listeners, found me in 2023. So, all right. So, but it does say 21% of the new listeners started on episode 1, which is Citizens of Pawnee. I'm so confusing right now. I'm like confusing the shit out of myself too. Teresa, to answer your question, I was streamed in 20 countries. The United States was my top country. 71% of the total streams from there. And then the second best was India. Not the rest of it was all from there, but that just goes to show you that India has the best bots. So thank you, India. The most shared episode was episode 82, which was season 2, episode 21, 94 meetings. Great episode. I don't know why that one was shared the most, but thank you. I'll take it. Podcast rating out of 5 was a 4.8. Woo! I'll take it. So it says I'm a top 10 podcast for 54 people. So that's awesome. Like 55 people who, you know, whatever, in the world, for Spotify, at least. These are all Spotify stats. I'm a top 10 podcast. Thank you. For 43 fans, I'm a top 5 podcast. And then for 10 people in this world who are on Spotify, I am the number 1 podcast. Thank you all so much. Not just you 10, anyone who listens to the show. It's awesome that anyone still does. And especially after, how I kind of stopped doing it for a while. And then I was just very, very lazy about getting new episodes out. So, thank you guys. I appreciate it. Also, sorry for the boring information there, Teresa, you asked for it. And again, you know how I am. I just like to throw, stuff in there to fill time. Like this filler I'm about to tell you about.
Everything he's saying is nonsense, and he's fooling them.
All right, this will be a quick one. New movie on Shudder? Maybe Amazon Prime? Maybe Hulu? I don't know. Definitely Shudder, though. It's a Wonderful Knife. Yes, A Wonderful Knife. Hee-hee. Fun play on words there. But this was... It's a new movie. I think it's brand new. A lot of podcasts are covering it and whatnot. I've listened to a couple reviews for it. I didn't care for it. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but so yeah, it's a play off of It's a Wonderful Life, obviously. But yeah, this girl, she kind of wishes, I wish I was never born. And then she obviously wakes up in this, the same place where no one knows who she is because she was essentially never born. So she's just kind of like, it's like a fish out of water type tale. And so she has to like solve a mystery so she can get back to her own, back to where she's from. But anyway, so it's like, it's a slasher film. It's violent. It's very violent. A little bit gory, if I remember. Not like over the top gory, but I mean, there's like a lot of stabbing. So that's always like very personal and very, ugh. But the movie, like the acting sucks in this movie. There's a couple Decent actors like Justin Long's in this. Joel McHale is in this. Some of the other people like you'd recognize by face and like, oh, okay, I know him. I know her. Like one of the girls was in, or actually the main character, she was in Yellow Jackets, but I can't remember who she was. She's the girl who blew up in the plane. Sorry, spoiler for Yellow Jackets. That show, I went down the tubes quick. But what are we talking about here? Oh yeah, this movie, It's a Wonderful Knife. It's very like Hallmarky. It's the best way to describe it. I mean, it's a very cheesy Christmas movie that is also a slasher film. So I mean, it fits well if they did this on purpose. But I mean, like I don't know. I didn't find it entertaining in that sense because like the acting sucked. And I mean, like there's a lot of things where like. It's yeah. And like, I don't buy Joel McHale as a dad. Like he plays this teenage girl's dad. And I guess Joel McHale's like 52, 53 years old. He still looks awesome for his age, but I will never be able to buy him as a nice character because he's like a prick and everything. So, that was a little bit weird to see. And Justin Long's in the movie too, who I like a lot, but I hated his character in this. And he was like kind of supposed to be, well, I mean, he was like a villain in this movie, but they just like, they gave him veneers and they like gave him this weird spray tan. Like he was supposed to play this like awful douchey character. And I just hated his portrayal of it because maybe he just did a good job, but either way, it wasn't for me like, oh man, that's a good villain. Like I just thought he sucked. Like he had this really weird voice and it just it didn't work for me. So I don't know, and just some of the writing was really stupid. Like there's a lot of stuff in the movie where you watch it and you just get frustrated. It's just like, fucking humans don't act like this. Humans wouldn't do that. Like I don't know. But it's a Christmas slasher film, so you know, and it was an easy watch, I guess. Like it wasn't terrible. But I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of me like not really reacting much, or if I was reacting, just kind of shaking my head like that doesn't make any sense and whatever. But yeah, it's if you've got nothing else to watch, if you have Shudder, again, I don't know if it's on Amazon or Hulu or not, but it's so you might have to pay for it. But yeah, if there's nothing else, check it out. So, alrighty. That's enough BSing. Let's get into some Parks and Rec. Season 3, episode 16, Lil Sebastian. This is the season 3 finale, by the way. Directed by Dean Holland, written by Dan Gore. All right, for the cold open, we start off with Tom and John Ralphio in the Parks Department coming up with some ideas for a new business venture. John Ralphio has come into some money recently, and he achieved that the old-fashioned way. He got run over by Alexis! So Tom's idea is to start Pawnee's first multimedia conglomerate.
It means audio, video, movies, yeah. 3D movies, nightclubs, iPhone apps. If it's entertainment, you're involved.
Yes, of course I am.
And you call it Entertainment 720.
No! Why? Why?
You gotta stop screaming.
I will. I just get excited. Why do we call it Entertainment 720?
Because you're willing to go around the world twice for your clients.
That is unbelievable! But listen to me. Listen to me. I'm going to need you on my team to pull this off, all right? I can't do this without you.
I don't know, man. I can't. I'd have to quit my job.
Okay, I'll do it without you.
And I love, like, how it ends there with John Ralphio just being like, all right, I'll do it myself. Because it's, like, such a prick move, just to say that at least, but it's something that Tom would totally say to anyone else. So I'm sure Tom didn't react, like, in any way to that. Yeah, he was probably just like, all right, yeah, cool. However, yeah, you know John Ralphio's not going to do shit by himself. All right, so we start off, we're in the Parks Department, where Leslie has gathered everyone for an important announcement about Lil Sebastian. He died last night. No! So, naturally, everyone is saddened at the news. Town Hall even lowered their flag to half-mast, which is great, because Ron says, when he first noticed it, he was very excited, thinking a bureaucrat died. No such luck. Isn't that, like, it's kind of like fucked up though that Ron's actually excited about this, thinking that like another human died, like someone that probably not necessarily I guess from City Hall, but either way, just thinking like a person died and then finding out it was Lil Sebastian and being like, half mast is too high, show some damn respect. So Leslie says that The town will be holding a memorial service for him, little Sebastian, obviously. We get a great foreshadowing running joke as the department bows their heads for a moment of silence. And just then, a custodian comes in to collect the garbage, and he's listening to Man, I Feel Like a Woman by Shania Twain. it's so good because, like, this dude just walks around and he's got, like, Shania Twain blasting out of his portable radio, which he just, like, has it on his belt clip. So it's funny that he's not wearing headphones. He just has it going. And this is, like, during business hours. So at any time, you know, like, he's just walking around having this thing blasting. Like, for here, for instance, I mean, like, granted, it's not like there was a sign up that says, like, do not enter during moments of silence, but it's just funny to me that this guy doesn't have headphones on, like, during business hours. So, anyway, the running joke with this is, though, because we will see this guy one more time, but, like, way down in season 7, and it's the episode where Ron and Leslie are fighting. It's episode 4 when they're locked in the Parks Department together and they can't get out. They see him from, like, across the courtyard in another office cleaning, and they're trying to yell, they're banging on the glass, and they can't get his attention because his music is too loud, which is... yet again. It's so good. All right, so I have to point this out. I found an error in this this scene. Now, this may have been planned, and I'll explain, like, how that could have, like, make sense, but I don't think it did. So what happens is, in this scene, Donna is already wearing a black armband with Lil Sebastian, like a memorial black armband. Now, right now, that doesn't mean anything to any of us because we don't know at this point. We haven't seen, or actually right when they say Lil Sebastian died, it shows everyone reacting. Everyone's like, no. Donna, however, is not. Donna is like, and I'm trying to recall in the episode, the Harvest Fest episode, when Leslie brings her in. First of all, I'm trying to remember if Donna's in that scene. I would assume she is, but clearly she doesn't react like everyone else does. So maybe Donna doesn't care that Lil Sebastian died. However, yeah, right when they show her, you can see she's already wearing one of the black armbands that later on in the episode, other people will be wearing at his memorial service. So this does happen in the same day. So Donna's wearing the same pink sweater later on. But why is she already wearing this armband? And obviously she has talked to other people in the department. Like, they've come in, they've said hello this morning because everyone's, like, at their desks and stuff when Leslie makes this announcement. Why hasn't ever anyone said, Donna, why are you wearing a black armband with Lil Sebastian on it? So that's why I'm saying it's like, okay, maybe they could have written it off as Donna doesn't care. That's why she's wearing the armband and she didn't make a big deal out of it. But I just find it hard to believe that if that was the case, no one would have asked her because she's wearing a pink sweater. So with a black armband over it, it's not like it would blend in. So they screwed up here, I believe. I think they filmed later, like maybe they filmed this out of order and that's why she still had the armband on, but it's like so blink and you'll miss it. So yeah, just look at that part there when Leslie comes in and tells everyone, when it shows a quick reaction, you can see Donna already has the armband on. So I think they just screwed up and they forgot to have her take it off. So, okay. We cut over to Anne's office where Ben shows up looking for Leslie. Anne tells him that she knows he and Leslie meet there from time to time to hang out in secrecy. Leslie can't make it though, so she left him a little note instead. Anne says that she's loving her new job. She tells us this in a talking head. She says that she's loving her new job and that since Stuart moved down the hallway, she has the office all to herself. So yeah, Leslie and Ben, they will set up meetings, quote, you find out later, Ben actually tells Anne, like, we don't, like, you know, basically because Anne's like, yeah, you guys can do whatever you want. Just don't do anything on my desk. And he tells her, he's like, we don't really do like that. They don't like do anything scandalous. He's like, we just like hang out and hold hands. You know, so Leslie, so Anne's like, oh, that for some reason that sounds worse. But anyway, yeah, so they usually go in there, and at least to Ben's knowledge, it's like when Anne's not there. So that's why the first time he comes in, he's kind of like, oh, he's like trying to play it off, but Anne's like, dude, I know what's going on. It's no big deal. So All right, over to the conference room, where Leslie starts handing out assignments for the memorial service. Ron will lay the ceremonial wreath. Jerry will read an Italian poem. Andy needs to write a song. And Leslie tells him that she wants it kind of like Candle in the Wind, but like 5,000 times better. So April negotiates Andy to actually get paid. He gets a commission for writing this song. He's going to get paid $50. This will come back to play later in the episode, actually. All right. Also, when Leslie hands out everyone's agendas, she mistakenly gives Jerry the one that was intended for Ben, because she actually hands it to Ben and she's like, I think you'll like the message on the bottom or on the back or whatever. And Ben flips it and he's like, what are you talking about? So then Jerry is the one that's just like, why does mine say you have a cute butt? And Leslie's like, one of them's like, oh, it must mean cube butt, you know? So they play it off, but it kind of goes to show you that like Leslie and Ben are getting kind of careless with their secrecy. Like they're doing, like, this didn't need to happen. Like Leslie didn't need to make a special note for Ben. Then there would have been nothing. However, they're able to play it off and they're doing a good job so far that no one is suspecting anything. But Jerry actually, after they tell him, it's like, oh no, it's this, da 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 da. And he's like, no, but why is it only mine? And then they actually, everyone turns their head to Leslie, like, yeah, Leslie. So looks like you're like, she was about to get caught, but then she just kind of like went back to making fun of Jerry. And so they were able to play it off. All right, so now we're at the hospital where Chris is getting a checkup from the ever-so-emotionless Dr. Harris. He tells Chris that he has tendonitis in his shoulder, which of course freaks Chris out. After some awful bedside manner is shown, Chris says one of the best lines, honestly one of my favorite Chris lines, and I think one of the funniest lines, the way it's delivered, he says, Dr. Harris, you are literally the meanest person I have ever met. And the reason that I think it's so funny is because Chris is so serious when he says this. And Dr. Harris isn't, he really doesn't, he tells, you know, Chris about the tendonitis and Chris is like, how do I fix this? And he's like, well, you build a time machine and you go back in time 15 years. You know, it's like, because there's really nothing you can do. It just kind of happens with old age. And that's, yeah, Chris is like, you're the meanest person I've ever met. But the way he says it, he sounds like a little kid, like talking to his mom or dad who like took his toy away. You are the meanest person I have ever met. So it's so funny to me. All right, so then we head over to Ron's office where he's meeting with Leslie and Ben to go over the memorial. Tom comes in and asks if Entertainment 720 can run the event. So there's actually, like, in this little scene here, I got to break down a couple things. There's a few things. All right. So first off, as usual, this doesn't make any sense because this company, like, how this is already a thing when, like, they did, like, in the very beginning of the episode, I'm imagining this cold open couldn't have been too much further ahead of here, but they hadn't even come up with a name. Like, literally, Tom just told him Entertainment 720. And now I guess if John Ralphio has the money that, you know, if he already has that money in his bank account from getting hit by the Lexus, then maybe, yeah, it doesn't matter. They could just pay whoever the hell they want to get all this equipment out there. But it just seems like yet another thing, another convenient thing that Tom comes up with that just miraculously appears, you know, that he has it ready that day. Like when, I got to make new IDs or new t-shirts. It's going to be done in like an hour. You're going to have like a box of them ready. So it is like a convenience, but whatever. I mean, it's a cool way to get the company introduced. And then the other thing is, like, this is more of an Easter egg. So you can see when Tom is talking, whenever they show him, you can see like next to his head, there's the little painting on the wall, not even painting. I think it's just, maybe it's a painting, but it's the one that Mark Brendanowitz did in the episode, The Camel. When he's just like, no, this one will work. And it's just a picture of a dude sitting on a park bench. So you remember they were going to use that one and they decided not to. They just went with the ugly one that everyone, you know, put together. However, Ron was like, when he walked past it, he said, that's a good one. That'll win. So I love that. And I can't remember, again, if in that episode, if he said, I'm going to keep this or whatever. But I like that he did decide to keep the painting. And you'll see it a lot more. But now that, like, this is the first time I believe that it's, like, that noticeable because it's right next to Tom's head. And then the other thing, and this one is actually hilarious. It's more, it's a callback to Little Sebastian's giant erections because they showed it in the the episode, the Harvest Festival, when Tom put the jacket on him and he was just like, wow, that is a massive horse erection or whatever it is. So they're sitting around and there's now like there's a giant picture. I think they have a projector on. Or maybe it's an actual picture, like a painting that's on the wall, but it's of little Sebastian. And sure enough, it's blurred out. Like it's got his, you know, his huge erection just blurred out. And Ron's just like, make us proud. Like talking to Tom about Entertainment 720. He's like, make us proud. Make him proud. And then that's when they show the picture on the wall. And Ben's just like, can't they just Photoshop that out? So that's why it's funny. Like, yeah, like ever, it just why do they have to keep showing us the horse's erection? Oh God! All right, so in the hallway, Anne and Chris have a quick talk, and this is like kind of awkward because it's still been awkward, even though they broke up like early on in this season. With the two of them, it's still because Chris was living in Indianapolis for a while, so Anne is still just like she feels weird being around him. He comes up, she asks how he's doing, and he says, I'm dying. She's like, what? So this is him over-exaggerating about his tendonitis diagnosis. He also finds out here that little Sebastian passed away, which really freaks him out and makes him question his own morality. So yeah, he's just kind of like very obvious, the not Chris Traeger we know, because he's usually so like joyful and happy, and this one's just like sad and like depressed, you know, so... next, we see Leslie heading over to Anne's office for a secret meeting with Ben. You know, one of these secret meetings with Ben. When she goes in, though, Ron's waiting for her. He asks her, how long have you been sleeping with Ben? Uh-oh. So she awkwardly tries to come up with excuses. Ron's not convinced, though, especially since Leslie just starts going to like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm sleeping with Ben. How do I know you're not sleeping with Ben? You know, so it's just getting like really ridiculous. And she just kind of gives up. But then, like, as if by design, Ben comes walking right through. He like kind of puts his hand around Leslie, and then he notices Ron, and he's just like, oh, like pushes Leslie away, and it's like, oh, hey, Ron, I was here for that. Do you know where the, you know? And then, yeah, so, Ron just tells him, like, he's like, I know. He says that Ben butt dialed him, and then he plays some of the non-sexy for anyone that is not Leslie and Ben. This is like the most yeah, again, unsexy thing. So here's some of that dialogue with Ben and Leslie.
Okay, and this is how Eleanor Roosevelt would kiss.
Whoa, Eleanor likes the tongue. Show me Pelosi again.
Okay, lay down.
Please tell me you hung up before Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Unfortunately not.
Oh, President Reagan, my blazer popped open.
Well, Maggie Thatcher, let me help you with that. It's going to be a bumpy ride to this summit meeting. Our countries have had a very special relationship.
Yes. Oh, no. You've proven your point.
So we quickly cut over to the shoeshine stand, and it just shows like Andy and April working on the song for the memorial. Andy just still like when he just some of this, the dumb, you know, it's like, you're the champion of death. It's, you know, April's just kind of like looking at us, you know, just like, what the fuck? Like, why can't this guy's like a good musician, but it's like he comes up with like the dumbest songs. It's awesome. All right. So now we are at the memorial site where all the city workers are setting up. Ben and Leslie are off to the side and they get caught kissing by one of the maintenance workers. So I brought this guy up a few weeks back when I covered the episode Jerry's Painting. He is the maintenance worker that Leslie made fix the light bulb in her office. So he, at that point, he was literally in just that one scene where Tom's like, oh, thanks for fixing the light bulb. And the guy's like, yeah, she made me do it. So I wonder, they never mentioned this, but I wonder if, because this guy will play a big role next season when Leslie and Ben like kind of get caught with this relationship. And this dude actually, you forget about him. Good thing, like I said, there are spoilers here. So, and I bet by the time we get to this, you'll have forgotten this if you're not that familiar with the show. But this guy kind of comes back and he testifies against Leslie. So you almost wonder, it's like, does this guy have, like, is he bitter towards Leslie still because she was like, hey, go fix that light bulb? And then if you remember, even in that episode, she told him, fix the copy machine too. He's like, I don't know how to fix it. She's like, just do it. So I don't know. It's kind of like, you kind of think about it, it's a little sweet revenge, even though he was doing his job. But for right now, though, like, nothing will come of this scandal, but like I said, it'll resurface next season. And this is, again, this is just in this episode, it's going with more of like how careless they're getting. They got caught by Ron already. They just got caught by this dude. And then earlier in the episode, they almost got busted with the letter, you know, that Leslie made for Ben that she gave to Jerry on accident. So later on, Chris runs into Anne and he asks her for advice. But he sets it up to be like so much, like such a more important question than it actually is. Like, Anne actually thinks that he's going to maybe bring up something about their relationship. And he starts talking about tendonitis again. And she's just like, what the hell? Like, she finally just can't like take it anymore. And she tells him that because of their past and how much he has like kind of screwed her up, like with, you know, like just the way he is and like leading her on almost, but him not knowing it, she's not ready to be friends. And she just tells him flat out, dude, don't come to me for advice right now. Like, I don't really want to be your friend. I'm not ready for it. So, and he respects it, you know, like, so. All right. So then we see Leslie and Ben approach the guy. His name is George Williams. He's the one that caught them, and they bribe him for his silence. So they tell him that he can have the rest of the day off, and they give him a coupon for a free massage, and they thank him for his discretion as he leaves. So clear, Leslie had this, you know, this coupon in her purse from like her mom or whatever, but she's like, oh, here, we want you to have it. And, you know, they tell him, oh, you know, what you saw, that wasn't what it was, and da da da. And this dude knows they're full of shit because he knows who they are. Maybe not like their importance, but he's like, I know they work. They both work for the government. And the way that they're acting right now, I've got some good leverage. So he's just like, yeah, cool. All right. So the Little Sebastian Memorial has started, and we meet the owners of Little Sebastian, Michael and Elizabeth Stone, as well as two of his closest friends, Ladybug and Coconut. This is a great timeline because Tom's the MC for the event, and he's like directing the whole thing, like the technical aspect, at least, of the whole service. And he calls to someone on his radio. He's just like, because he says, like, he's like, okay, Coconut and Ladybug, go ahead, you're on the stage. And he's like talking quietly, and then all of a sudden he's just like, Coconut just took a dump on stage. Repeat, Coconut took a dump on stage. We're gonna have to get that cleaned up. And the camera shows over, and of course you can just see like a pile of like horse shit on the stage right behind her. It's just like such a small detail, but I think it's the way like Tom says it, because he's being so serious. But it's like, yeah, Coconut took a dump on stage, and he's like talking like an agent, you know, into his little head speaker. So it's awesome. All right, so then Tom tells Leslie, however, this is when like things start getting kind of chaotic, and it's like the trickle down effect, because they told this one guy that he could leave early because he caught them. So Tom tells Leslie that no one can find that dude, and obviously Leslie's not going to say anything. She's like, oh, okay, so don't worry about that. But he had the fuel for the eternal flame, which was supposed to be lit. This, of course, the guy, like I said, the guy who they told to leave, he's supposed to have all this stuff. And yeah, so now everything kind of goes into chaos. But we cut over to the main stage where Tom introduces the video tribute for Little Sebastian. John Ralphio, I love that he's just sitting back, kind of letting Tom do all of this. He's got some nice, pleasant words for Donna, though, about the presentation.
Hope you brought a change of clothes, because your eyes are about to piss tears.
You're nasty.
So then the video plays, which is, of course, narrated by Tom. He actually has, like, a pretty good narrator voice. It's very touching, though, and well done. Another thing that just happens so quickly, because we don't know. Actually, you know what? I don't think it's the night of, but again, Donna is wearing the same pink sweater, so maybe it's just one she wears, like, outside. Because, again, they got this video done, of course, incredibly fast. So, anyone let me know, because I'm probably not going to go back and watch the episode. Did Leslie say, like, we're having a memorial service tonight in the very beginning? I should have looked into that more. Anyway, but Anne, at this time too, as this video is playing, this very touching video, Anne notices Chris crying very heavily, And it's actually, it's good acting by Rob Lowe, because he's not making a big deal out of it. He's crying to himself, but he's just trying to, like, you feel bad for Chris. Like, even though he kind of screwed Anne over, he didn't do it on purpose. It's just how he is. But, yeah, so I don't know. I just thought it was a pretty good scene. And then they kind of show John Ralphio too. Like, there's a little, like, a voiceover thing going on. And John Ralphio is making his pitch to Tom, to that he's just like, dude, you've got to come join me at Entertainment 720. Like, you got to do this with me. And, you know, Tom's really considering it. So then Leslie's on stage to introduce Mouse Rat. Woo! Again, I love Mouse Rat. Love when they're in episodes. And here it is, folks. We get the show's most iconic song, 5,000 Candles in the Wind. I've played this song so many damn times, so I'm not going to play it. Everyone knows the song. Bye, bye, little Sebastian. That one. Yeah, it's a great song. And I feel like it's like a staple of the show that has like actually gone just beyond the show. I think it's kind of become a little pop culture-y. So good stuff. All right, after that, we start to see the ramifications of Leslie and Ben sending George Williams home. So like I said before, that was the start of it, with them not being able to find the fuel for the Eternal Flame. So it's really just a domino effect that has everyone doing different jobs, including Donna, now reading the Italian poem that Jerry was supposed to read. He's out, though, buying propane for the Eternal Flame. Just then, Ron calls out Leslie and Ben for all the fuck-ups, and he asks, who caught you? Because he can just tell by the way they're acting and how all of a sudden it's like, oh, no, this person's got to do this and you got to do that. They just kind of gloss over it, though, when they tell Ron that, hey, you get to light the memorial flame now, even though he was supposed to lay the ceremonial wreath, which is great because he's like, anyone who knows me knows that I definitely prefer laying ceremonial wreaths over lighting memorial flames. So I love it that he has his favorite things to do at a memorial service. So Ron gives a speech, a great one, where he tells us he's only cried twice in his life. Once one was when, I think he says when he was 7 years old and he was hit by a school bus. And then the other time was when little Sebastian died. So it's like the second time he cried must have been earlier this week or this day or whatever it is. But he goes over and he lights the flame. However, like, it's great. Like, right before he does it, it cuts away and you can see Ron off to the side in the background. And Leslie's like, oh, hey, Jerry, did you get the propane? He's like, no, they didn't have any, so I just got a bunch of lighter fluid. So you just see Ron going to light it. And of course, anyone who's familiar with lighter fluid, if you've ever been like a young dumbass and tried to light like a bonfire with lighter fluid, if you throw it like in a cup or whatever, or even if you get close to it, the fumes will catch and kind of make like a stream will come up. And that's exactly what happens with Ron. He goes to light the thing and the flame just is pulled to the giant lighter thing that he has that's filled with lighter fluid. And there is a giant explosion like right in front of Ron's face. It's so good. So, yeah, it just, like, engulfs him for a second, but then Leslie, she's just kind of like, oh my God, we planned that, because everyone's like, they all react, and what's great, like, I love the attention to detail, is that Ann Perkins, they show her standing up. She, like, a couple people stand up, I think, just to see if he's okay, but her, as a nurse, it makes the most sense, because she's immediately in, like, oh my God, like, I might have to tend to this guy mode, so it's awesome. All right, so now we're back at City Hall for like the after party. So the little Sebastian Memorial is over. Jerry apologizes to Ron for the lighter fluid, as we see that Ron's eyebrows, some of his mustache, and even some of his hair has been melted off or singed off, leaving us with one of the greatest visuals in the whole tenure of the show. And that's Ron's face just when he's talking to Jerry. And he's like, yeah, Jerry, it's okay. Like, Jerry apologizes for, you know, obviously the thing, like I said, and he can't tell though if Ron's being sarcastic enough, because he's like, I can't tell if you're mad or not with you not having eyebrows. So it's so good. I mean, there's a little bit of his mustache left in his hair, because he's usually just got that huge, like that pomp. But it's just like melted off all the front of it. It's so good. I mean, like, I'm hoping it was a wig, or maybe they actually did that. Who knows? And then they just cut his hair because it was the season finale. So it's like, you got time to grow it back, but it looks so good. So then off to the side, Ben and Leslie decide that there's, you know, like just how everything kind of turned out, like in it, like it turned out well, but it got really chaotic. They're just like, we can't do this anymore. Like we can still stay as a couple, but like we have to be even more careful. We can't, you know, like no more of these like notes, no more of this BS. Yeah, we're going to stay together, but we're just going to do a better job at keeping it a secret. And then we kind of cut off again. There's just kind of a lot going on with like Lil Sebast or 5,000 Candles in the Wind is like playing in the background, like the recorded version of it. Again, the recorded version of it already. Like how? Like Andy just wrote this song, but there's like a CD version of this already. So this had to have been like a week or two after like the opening of the episode where we found out he died. Who knows? But yeah, Tom is asking Ron for job advice, and Ron basically tells him, he's like, yeah, you, I love having you here because you don't care about the government at all, but also, you know, maybe you should go do your own thing because this is clearly not what you want to do. And then just out of nowhere, Tammy too shows up.
Two of my lovers in one place. What a coincidence.
Tammy.
Hello, Ron. Well, what happened here? And more importantly, does the carpet match the face?
If you're looking for trouble, take it somewhere else. An hour ago, a giant fireball consumed my entire face. And it was far preferable to spending another second with you.
Mm-hmm. Tell that to your pants tent.
It's just the way I'm standing. Go back to the library where you belong.
And two quick things there. One, I just love that when she asks Ron about his pants tent, you actually like Ron, you know, he like uncomfortably like what, like shifts a little bit, but you actually see Tom kind of like turn his head around and look down. Like he's even just like, what? And then the other thing, yeah, you know, how Tammy too, she was just like, oh, my ex-lovers obviously remember Tom tried using her to make Ron jealous back in season 2. And she like beat the shit out of him later in season 3. So it's just funny. She calls them both her lovers. So then, and she realizes, you know, Chris is still really like upset about Lil Sebastian and everything, you know, she can see he's down. So, she calms him down. She just goes over and talks to him and they're kind of like, all right, like the two of them, they make up and it's like, yeah, we can be friends. All right. Over to the shoe shine stand, Andy sells some Mouse Rat CDs to Kyle. And then he asks April if she'll be his manager, which she actually gets really excited about and she accepts the job, which is funny because I wonder if the rest of Mouse Rat talked about this because we never really see April's relationship with the other guys in Mouse Rat. There was in the episode last week, I think it was when she got them together or two episodes ago at when they got in the fight because of Tom's game show, when she got Mouse Rat to come play with her in the mouse, you know, in the courtyard. So at least, you know, she is, you know, clearly she can get a hold of them and she's on good terms with them, at least enough that she could call them and be like, hey, come do this. So, but yeah, or actually, you know what? Everything I just said might've been bullshit because, or not bullshit, but like completely unnecessary because she asked, Andy asks her to be his manager, not Mouse Rat. So, I should just edit all that out, but I'm not gonna, maybe I will. We'll see. All right, and then, yeah, we see Tom hand his resignation letter over to Ron. So, like I said, the song 5,000 Candles in the Wind is playing, and oh, that's why these are all, like, just really quick, short things that are happening during this. All right, so then we see Leslie approached by a man and a woman who are part of a group that tries to identify potential political candidates for Pawnee. Their names are William and Elizabeth. They're played by Johnny Sneed and Antonia Raftu, respectively. They will both appear in 6 episodes, so 5 more moving forward, as Leslie's kind of like on-off political advisors. I say on-off because they start with her and then eventually they move on because of something that happens, but we still see them a couple more times. They tell her that there are a few city council spots opening and even potentially the mayor's spot. But it seems like they're more like, well, there's, you know, city council seems more like what they're eyeballing. There is just one problem, though. Obviously, this is just on Leslie's end because they don't know about it yet. And that's her relationship with Ben, because when William asked her if there are any scandals going on, and this is, you know, it could be anything. You know, it's like, hey, did you, because he says this to her, we need to know if there's anything going on. I mean, it's like if you stiff like someone at a restaurant, like on the tip or whatever, it's like we need to know things like that. We need to get ahead of any possible scandals. Leslie obviously has a lot of problems with people in the town and they have their gripes with her. But as far as scandals, yeah, the Ben thing's pretty big, but right now her, Ben, Ron, and only a couple other people know about that. So, yeah, so it's a big deal, but she tells him, no. And she actually says this as she's looking at Ben, who can kind of see this meeting going on, but doesn't really know who she's talking to because he is out in the courtyard talking to Jerry. All right, so then we cut over to Ron, who's still being followed around by Tammy. She's just, again, just, you know, being awful and just won't stop, like, saying, like, nasty things. Not, like, mean nasty things, but she's just, like, being, like, a horn dog. So she's following him around. And then we see Donna rush over to tell Ron that his ex-wife just showed up. But not the one he's already talking to, Tammy one. Because he's like, yeah, Donna, no kidding. She's right here. And he's like, no. He's like, not that one. And he's like, what, Tammy One? And she's like, yeah, she's in your office. We have not met Tammy One yet. They kind of show us, they pan over to the side and you can see someone, like they haven't showed the face yet, but you see someone's arm like moving around in his office. So she's doing something at his desk, but it's just like, yeah. And to show just how much people fear Tammy One, we see Tammy Two. Again, we know how awful she is. She actually just says a one-syllable swear word that is bleeped out, and then she takes off. So I'm guessing it's either shit or fuck. But she says that, and then she just runs away. We will find out later, actually, that she had battery, or maybe it wasn't even battery acid, but acid thrown at her by Tammy One. So, yeah. Then we see that Leslie is looking at Ben. She's both happy and sad. And you know, because she really wants to be a city councilor, but she knows that she might have to break up with him. But I guess you're gonna have to wait until next season to find out what happens, because that's the end of the episode, except for the tag, where we are introduced to Tom's new business, Entertainment 720. Well, his and John Ralphio's business. It is a gigantic white warehouse with amenities everywhere. DJ Blunts, who I think we saw, maybe this is his first episode, actually. I'm trying to remember. But yeah, DJ Blunts, who we will see in a few more episodes. He's just the kind of resident DJ. And then also Detlef Schrempf. He's got him on retainer. Of course, the basketball player who played for many NBA teams, and he was in the episode Telethon. Tom's basically just pays him to be there and just play basketball. So I love how it ends the episode, because after they go through and they show the whole warehouse, John Ralphio comes running over and he's like, hey, Big D, hit me, talking to Detlef Schrempf. And he's like, uh-oh. And he goes to like for a layup, and Detlef Schrempf just stuffs him and just like knocks the ball away. It's so funny. And then like John Ralphio just like kind of comes over and shoves him from behind, and is just a really funny scene. But yeah, so that is the season finale for season 3, Little Sebastian on IMDb. This episode's sitting at an 8.8, which is rightfully deserved, I think. This was a longer episode too, at least the version I watched, which was on Peacock. This is like a 26-minute long episode. I think there is a shorter one, but I don't know, maybe not. So just a couple of my thoughts. First off, it's good to see Ann Perkins back to being relevant. So yeah, not super, like there wasn't like anything really revolving around her, but you're seeing her and Chris, like this story's kind of starting back up again. I love that Tom is starting a new business venture, because it's, you know, like the part, it doesn't really make sense when you think about it that he would be working there. He does say, or he has said that, really the only reason he works for the Pawnee government is because it was for the connections. Like with whatever he had in mind, he wanted to have those connections. But yeah, Tom's just, it's not definitely like what he's doing. That's not the kind of stuff he wants to do. Like that April is now Andy's manager. We'll have that moving forward. I didn't talk about it before, but like when Chris and Anne, when they talk at the end and they kind of like become friends again, you can already kind of tell that he's like maybe interested in her again. He doesn't quite say it, but he does say that he's like ready to start getting back out there. And he's kind of looking at her as he says it, I think. Tammy One's come in. Oh, shit. It's not good. She does not come for that long, though. So I guess I can't, I don't want to build it up like she's coming, like, because she's only in one episode, or like one and the end of another episode, but she's an awesome character. So that's coming up. Ben and Leslie's carelessness finally getting them in trouble. So that was kind of good that these two characters who are very smart, they're just being idiotic. However, they're in love. So and then I like that Leslie's run at city council has officially begun, or at least like been mentioned by these advisors. So it's pretty awesome because next season is all about that. And yeah, can't wait to talk about it. So that is going to wrap up this episode. If you'd like to contact the show, citizensofpawnee@gmail.com is how you can do that. You can also like and follow on Instagram at citizensofpawneepodcast and at parksrecmemes. I'm going to take a few weeks off for the holidays. I will be back after New Year's, and then we will jump into season 4 from there. It's just, obviously, like I said, with the holidays, I'm going to be busy. I'm going to have some time off. It's going to be nice, so I'll maybe have some stuff a little earlier than that, but we'll see. But, you know, let's just say after New Year's, that probably that first Tuesday there, there will be an episode, or there should be one. But, yeah, so everyone, have a safe and happy holiday season and a happy new year. Eat tons of food, watch Parks and Rec, and while you're with all your friends and family, tell them about this podcast. Grab their phone if they're not paying attention. Pick it up. Open up Spotify. Open up Apple Music. Download the episodes. Just hit play, whatever. Play them for a minute. Give me those numbers. It'll be wonderful. Thank you so much for listening to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. My name is Brian. And I'll see you next year. Jerry chokes on a saltine cracker when Chris proposes to Anne.